Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Trip Flip every Sunday nights on Travel Channel at 8 p.m. 7 Central. I'm on tour. Austin, May 23rd through 25th. Des Moines, Philly, Buffalo. This week's guest, Zane Lamprey. Go to BirdBirdBird.com.
Is the BirdCast.
So then they got freaked out. And then
we're recording. We're recording.
Okay.
Just, you know, I agree with you and what everything you're fucking saying.
Yeah.
It has been my experience business.
Are you editing or are you
recording?
No, this is it.
Just edit it. And we'll just play it. And if there's something you don't want in there, we can take out.
So the end of the story is they said, well, we can't have it. And I go, then this is a perfect time to leave.
Yeah. I have a hard time in this business leaving agents and managers.
Can I put my feet?
Yeah,
I
of course.
Can. It's a metal table.
Yeah. I have a hard time. I fucking fired everyone that ever meant anything to me in this business and replaced them with new people that mean more.
Wait, so you've figured a way out of the cycle? I haven't figured my way out of the cycle yet.
I used to genuinely be invested in the people, and I thought I was adding family members into my team.
Right.
And now I realize everyone gets fired. Everyone,
you know, you start to wonder. You start to think, like, you know what? Like, do I? Tell me if you've gone through this too. So you and I have had similar career paths. As a matter of fact, we've been up for several of the same parts.
Seriously?
Yeah, you got them.
Wait, what was it? Hang on one second. I'm a horrible podcaster. In the man cave is Zane Lamprey. I brought Zane in because not only have I followed your career from when you started with Three Sheets.
You followed my career in the rearview mirror. As you were taking off and leaving me in the dust, you motherfucker.
You want to talk about perspective? I got an HD television. I put it on. There's only fucking one show to watch, and it's yours.
That was amazing, right? So that was back in like 2006 or 7, and that show did amazing. It was only in 5 million homes, but it was in the most important 5 million homes because everyone who had money had an HD channel, and they watched it.
It was the epitome of Bill Gates moving across the street from a computer lab.
And when was
so like the, in the movie book Outliers, Bill Gates. The reason Bill Gates is Bill Gates, he just happened to live next to a computer lab.
Got it.
You made a show that was awesome that a lot of networks would not have greenlit.
No,
at a time when there was a network who didn't have programming and was like, "This is fucking great. It's beautiful. Use our cameras. Put it up on our thing." And then it was an awesome show, and it got seen by fucking everybody.
Right, it did.
By everybody. And how many? You did years of that?
So this is Three Sheets. I did 4 years, and the
100 episodes, right?
Of Three Sheets, about 51.
Really?
Then the next one I did about 60 of.
What's that? Well, that's Drinking Made Easy.
Yeah. And so the interesting thing is that they were not advertiser. They weren't sponsor based. They were subscription based. So they got paid by
HBO.
They're exactly like HBO, but without as much money.
Well, that's fucking awesome because now you don't have to worry about which I'm sure you found is the problem now with doing a drinking show is everything is integration sponsor based.
Well,
it's hard to integrate.
Yeah, and I didn't think it would be as difficult as it has been to get sponsors. I could get sponsored by a lot of people if I went to AA. Like that kind of sponsor I can get very easily. They knock at my door.
They're not the fun sponsors.
They're not the fun ones.
Have you ever been to an AA meeting?
No.
I have. They suck.
They would be like, "What? You know, you're the devil. You put us here."
Just smiling the whole time. I haven't done anything.
Why'd you go?
Just to perspective.
Yeah.
To see, like, this was like probably 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was partying a lot, but I also wasn't working.
Right.
I wasn't working, and I was like, "Fuck! What am I doing with my life?" My wife had just dumped me, and I was like, "I need to really find out where the fuck I'm at."
Right.
And I was like, "Do I?" Because I've been a big drinker since I was 22, 21, and I'm 40 now. So I'm like, "Okay, I should look at this."
Right.
I had a friend who was a professional wrangler, so like a dude who.
Like a horse wrangler?
No, like a alcoholic wrangler, drug wrangler.
That's a person?
Yep.
Who pays that person?
The studio.
So, okay, so...
So let's... Okay, so I'm going to... Okay, let's pretend. Let's just... I can't tell you the names. I can tell you the names off thing, but I can't tell you the names.
But I don't even understand the concept.
John Belushi, when John Belushi was doing like Blues Brothers, they hired a guy named Grizzly.
Okay.
Or some, I forget the guy's name, to follow him everywhere he went to make sure he didn't use coke.
Got it.
So what happens is, like, hypothetically speaking,
he did an excellent job.
that guy is no longer working.
With a name like Grizz.
I forget his name.
He probably was the guy that sold it to him.
I forget the guy's name. But anyway, so let's hypothetically say Leonardo DiCaprio. Let's say hypothetically that there's a really huge movie star who is a heroin addict.
Okay.
Like hypothetically, like say that happened.
Okay.
And the
studio, would never happen because they have integrity.
Right. You know, and that. So the studio said, we want to do this movie with them. And we know he's sober, but we don't believe it.
Right.
And so in order to ensure this movie, we need to hire this guy to follow him everywhere he goes. Live with him. Take him to meetings. Drive him. He needs to be his right-hand man because we know this guy won't let him.
So this is paid for by the insurance company, basically.
The insurance company.
As a rider for their coverage.
Right. Okay. To make sure that the movie is insurable because that guy falls off the wagon, this $300 million movie does not get made.
Right.
He was my neighbor. And he saw me one morning. I was like...
The following guy was your neighbor?
Yes.
Got it.
The Wrangler.
The Wrangler.
Yeah, I wish I could just tell you his fucking name so I don't have to say the Wrangler.
No, but it's better that way.
So
the Wrangler's cooler.
So he saw me one morning and I was like, I had been partying. We were dating. She dumped me. I'd just gone out and got fucking blitzed and I did not sleep. And I was up having an Asian pear we lived in the hills up on this cliff.
Okay.
And like sitting there just kind of thinking about things. And he sat down next to me and he was like, what's going on?
I love how the Asian pear like played into
the
story.
It was the best.
But I like it. That's an excellent hangover. A cold one?
Ice cold. That's why I remember it.
Yeah.
Ice cold Asian pear. Yeah. And I remember thinking, this tastes good.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck. I remember thinking that going, wow, I'm eating this slow.
And all of a sudden it goes, wah, 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 wah. And the Wrangler walks up.
Yeah.
Hey, boy.
He came up.
How's that pear doing?
He was cool as shit. Like, sleeved in tattoos, fucking ripped, like drove a nice car. He got paid a lot of money.
He was an ex-user. That's how he was
able
to control.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
He's an ex-junkie, I think. Okay. I'll have him. Maybe I'll have him on a podcast one day. But so he comes up and he's just talking to me and he's like, you know, you ever thought about quitting drinking? I was like, sometimes. He's like, why don't you come to a meeting with me tonight and just kind of feel it out, see where you're at. So I go, okay. So we go to the meeting and we're just sitting in the back watching. And he's like, is it making sense? And I'm like, yeah, you know, because you're real vulnerable at that time.
Yeah, sure.
And then this guy stands up right before, like standing right next to me, stands up. He goes, oh, I'm having a really, really hard day. This morning I woke up and blew my landlord and then I lit his car on fire. Okay, listen, here's the deal. I need a drink. And I was like, I do not have fucking problems.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm fucking out. I've never been back.
You know what's funny? So I get on my Facebook and the problem is, well, whatever. You know, it's the internet, so people can make comments, and they don't have to have those comments
based
in... Yeah, exactly. There
Trolls.
We go. Trolls. And so they'll say these nasty things, and you have the option of hiding what they post, deleting it, or responding to it. So since I decided, look, I'm doing this Chug Kickstarter campaign...
Yeah,
should we go back a little bit or just keep going?
I want to. The whole reason I wanted to talk to you for many reasons is one as a fan, but is this Kickstarter campaign that you started to raise $500,000 for a documentary or a TV show called Chug?
Right.
That'll provide 10 episodes, 5 episodes,
6 episodes,
6 episodes.
That, yeah,
6 episodes. You take a train around the world tentatively.
Yeah.
And drink and find out the different drinking cultures in the different areas.
So basically, we did. We did 3 sheets on Mojo, which is where you would have seen it first.
Fucking great show.
So the show was doing amazing. Got the phone call. The show's doing amazing. However, the network is going off the air. Their non-advertising based revenue did not work out. So they went out. So then there was a I was like, man, I don't want to fade into obscurity. I was just starting to get a foothold into this. So
yeah.
I organized the Save 3 Sheets campaign in LA and New York, really just to stay relevant, but also to show the networks, hey, look, there's a big fan base. So we literally we met at a Pink Taco over in Century City,
burping,
and then walked through Century City, you know, the new I think the ICM office, and then through Beverly Hills to like 2 or 3 bars, and then came back and had a party, and it's like 700 people.
Holy
and
shit!
And it was massive. We walked through the ICM building. and you can walk through it. It's a massive building. And security didn't even know what to do. There's like four of them. They heard us coming.
What do you mean, CAA?
That big one. Yeah,
CAA is
yeah.
over there yeah. in that area, I think.
That big, weird one there. And so we, you know, it was echoing through there. It was amazing. And then they didn't know what to do. They just said, get out. So we walked out and then walked through Beverly Hills and went by, I guess, ICM at that point and WME, the big agencies, whatever, and said, hey, just take note. Somebody
help us make this fucking happen.
Exactly.
This is well before the Veronica Mars Kickstarter campaign.
Oh, shit. This, I looked this up the other day. This was like, it was like 08 or something like that. And maybe 09. And so...
I remember, I can tell you distinctly, I just had my my 6-year-old now when I started watching Mojokes. We moved into this apartment, bought a big screen TV. Just recently got rid of it. It was high def, and it was a fucking beautiful show. I mean, it was a fucking great show. And there's only one beef I have with that entire show that I will share with you now.
Share it.
In the snowboarding episode, was that you that did the fucking...
Does that bother you?
Yes, because I went, are you fucking kidding me?
He's getting
fucking hammered, and he can really snowboard like a motherfucker?
You know, I decided that I would... Before I'm going to answer that in a long form, I decided that I would... I would always find stunt doubles when possible.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
because I love it.
Because I wanted people to talk about it. So like I went kite surfing. That wasn't me kite surfing. I went the largest.
That's so fucking brilliant.
The best was that was one of our camera guys. He's an editor. He's a professional snowboarder. He actually arranged for a company to send me all this gear. I wore it. I learned how to snowboard the day before.
You literally did like a fucking 360 off a fucking kicker.
Yeah.
And then stop and you go with the board. I'm like, are you fucking kidding
me? No, there's no way you can tell.
There's no way. I watched it 100 times.
Yeah, just edit.
I watched it 100 times. I fucking distinctly my mom just landed. Let me make sure. Just making sure we're recording. That's what I always do in this podcast. I need someone that works for me or something because this is exhausting. So you get stunt doubles. That's fucking genius.
So one time I said let's do this. We were in Namibia, Africa, the largest sand dune in the world, and you go to this place near the road, and you get these four these ATVs, these four wheelers, and you ride a few miles, which is like on the moon, but amazing. It's like waves. It's like waves of sand. You go up one, and you're just following this guy, and he knows where he's going, and then you come to this massive one, and this guy does this every day. So he's doing wheelies. He's riding on his front wheels, his back wheels. He's like doing all crazy stuff. So we get there. I'm like, I can't go. And if you ever watch the episode, you will see the size of this. I don't think it translates. It is the biggest sand dune in the world. And so this guy rides up it. It's about, like, let's say you would tip at 45 degrees. It's about 43.
Yeah.
And so the guy's just, like, riding up it. And so he takes my clothes. This guy, by the way, I think may have had, like, a meth problem because he probably weighed about 120 pounds. I mean, like, his face was gaunt. He was, you know, whatever. And so the camera guy's like, no, dude, no one's going to believe it. I go, just do it. Give my sunglasses, helmet, whatever.
Yeah.
And he goes and he's doing all these tricks. And so then he rides on a wheelie. To the camera and then drops it. And right as they drop it, cut, and then I get on it, right, in my clothes, and then they're holding the front of it up. All the ATV guys. And then they let go, it drops, and I drop right into frame. I'm like, ah, that was nice. And all I did was sit on it, and when it dropped, I was a little nervous. You know what I mean? This guy's doing all these tricks, so I don't know what to drop off it.
Because I saw you do all this fucking shit, and I was always like, are you fucking kidding me? Because I know the drinking part's real. I know that's you drinking.
Yeah. Well, not everyone understands that, and there's a lot of misconceptions. Some people have said that I'm not really drinking. That's not true. I do, and I got bad hangovers. And maybe... Well, I was going to say in retrospect, maybe I wouldn't have drank as much. But that was part of the magic was that I just literally just threw myself into this part and said whatever
It read
happens.
Like that. It read like that. And you didn't look like – you also didn't come off like an alcoholic and you didn't come off with a dude with a drink problem.
Well, not until
you came up like a regular dude.
Not until the third season did we even know we had fans. I shot the first season for a channel called NHD. It wasn't even Mojo at the time.
Yeah.
It was like NHD in that it was NHD. And that was those were the call letters. And it's like you have to think a little bit when you name your network that you know what, that's not gonna last. It's like in color. You know what I mean? Like at some point, everyone's gonna be in color, buddy. So we did the show on there. We did the rally in New York and in LA. Then 2 days later, did the rally in New York, and we had like 1,000 people. It was a mob. We couldn't even fit into the bars that we went to. And so I'm at this bar. I don't remember the name of it. This big Irish bar, 3 levels. And somebody comes up and said, "Hey, Mark Cuban's downstairs. He wants to talk to you." I'm like, "The guy, HDNet Mavericks, whatever." Like, yeah. I'm like, "No, it's not. But okay, I'll go down there." Obviously, you don't know who he is because, you know, whatever. And I go down there, and sure enough, it's Mark. He's like, "Hey, Zane, I've been with you for the last few bars. I want to get 3 sheets." I'm like, "That's awesome. However, I haven't thought this out this far. I didn't expect that to happen. I don't own 3 sheets. I don't own the network. I don't even know what the status of it is."
Don't you know what it's like to be an unprepared, unorganized talent? I don't own this show.
Dude, I didn't expect anyone to even show up today, so I'm a little drunk right now. And so I put him in touch with the network, and then they, I don't know, whatever the deal is. Oh, they wanted to, they didn't just sell Fine Living Network, who's the channel that bought it. They didn't sell them 3 sheets. And I haven't told this before. They had to buy 5 shows. They only wanted 3 sheets. So they bought 5 shows, put them away, and then aired the last season of 3 sheets, but had to buy these five other shows.
What were the other ones? The one with the two gamblers were gambling?
Yeah, the two gamblers.
Yeah.
There was one called Going Abroad. This guy would date girls internationally. They weren't bad. Dave Hill's show.
Dave Hill's
I think.
Show was good.
Yeah.
Dave, that's the reason I know Dave Hill and bought his book.
Yeah.
Dave Hill's show was really good.
He's hilarious. You know what's really good? It's really good, but this guy, Rob, I forgot, the guy who ran the network didn't get him. And you could understand how someone couldn't get Dave Hill.
Oh, yeah.
He's so dry and emo and like smart, funny. Dry emo funny, if that makes sense. That like I can understand that someone would watch it and not even see a joke the entire show
and be like, "This guy's a horrible host."
Yes, yes.
He's not going out of his way to be likable. He's not laughing.
Yes,
he's
almost mean. But
he was
great.
That was a great show.
Yeah, it was. And so those are the shows that came along. But I think maybe only like 3 Sheets was new or something like that, or maybe that I Bet You was new too. But then so we were on the Fine Living Network. They flew me in. I had like this promo shoot with, remember Duff from MTV, the girl?
Yeah, I do.
And a few other people that had shows on Fine Living that were new shows. They're rolling them out.
Fine Living Network. Which, Mark Cuban's?
No. Fine Living Network was just this. No, his is HDNet, so he didn't get it. So long story short, they premiered the fourth season that didn't air on Mojo because they went out of business, but we finished shooting them. And then they called me, swear to God, same conversation. "Dude, just want to let you know," which is sort of irrelevant. "The show is doing amazing. Great big fan base. We're getting, you know, great numbers and da da da. However, the network is closing down." So Fine Living Network, also I crush networks. That's what I bring. That's what I bring. This podcast, by the way, might fucking shut down after this. I have that power. I have that ability.
It's so funny. I said to my wife the other day, I've dated a number of girls who then went lesbian, and my wife's like, "Are you fucking kidding me?"
Yeah.
I was like, "I have like 3 girls that I dated that then became lesbian."
And now she's like, "You know, you kind of make me like not..."
You'll meet
like
my wife. She's a little butchy.
You know, I met her playing softball. The show went to... So Fine Living... We didn't know what to do. Here's what happened. We didn't have control over it because at the same time that Fine Living went off the air and turned into Cooking,
one of my sister networks.
And so Scripps had bought Fine Living and Fine Living, whatever it was. They were now all part of the same group.
So they acquired your content.
So then Travel acquired it. I talked to them on the phone. They called me. I forgot the woman's name. And she said, "Look, we've acquired 3 Sheets. We're not going to do any promotion for it. We just want to see how it does. Just put it out for a few weeks." I'm like, "All right, that's a little rough." So, but you know, I'm like, "Okay, that's great. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. You know, we know whatever."
Yeah.
And then I get this rally these fans, and thank God for social media. As I cursed it a few minutes ago, now I say, "Well, but here's the saving grace of it."
Yeah.
Is that I can motivate the troops to basically in this case. made friends shooting Three Sheets and Drinking Made Easy with Garrett Marrero, who owns Maui Brewing Company. And I said, hey, why don't we do something with like PayPal? We can buy beer and then send it to Travel Channel and to say thank you. He's like, I love it. I'll give you guys cost, whatever it is. So we ended up, we sent them out. I don't really know the final. I didn't know the final numbers until recently. And I said, and then, so we got a call from Travel. And I said, hey, did you guys get the beer? And they're like, yeah, which we want to talk to you about. Because remember the discussion that we're not doing any promotion for it. I said, well, you said you were, and you didn't say I had to keep my mouth shut. Yeah. I thought that you would relish this exposure.
Yeah.
And they said, no. I said, so we were going to do a press release just saying that the beer got there. You know, Maui Brewing Company donated a lot of beer, even though it was paid for, you know, the shipping, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And they're like, no, we're not going to do it.
Really?
We don't want to do it. And so, oh, and at this time, you know what else happened right before this is, and this had nothing to do with me, Three Sheets fans were blowing up the Travel Channel Facebook page. Blowing up. They couldn't really? Post one thing without 50 people say, you know, saying, hey, we have a new show, da, 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 da. Fuck that show, pick up Three Sheets. I mean, in those words.
Really?
And they called me at one point and said, hey, look, we're going to try the show, but we need you. We're considering the show. So this goes back a little bit to show you the history. We're considering the show, but we really need you to tell the people to stop. And I said, well, first of all, I didn't tell them to start. So yeah. I wouldn't know how to do that without having a paper trail that you guys could lead to me. I didn't do that. I said, however, them doing that has made you guys call me. So I'm going to just go out on a limb and say that's not such a bad thing. I will certainly go out and say, hey, you guys relax. But to be honest with you, the best thing you could do would just be to air Three Sheets. I mean, you know, whatever. Like you guys,
the best thing
own
they
it anyway.
The best thing they should do and could do in that, in my opinion, in that case for you would be get rid of Three Sheets and just do a brand new series with you.
Right.
Like that's because that's. I mean, because were you making money off of Three Sheets?
No.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
and I didn't make good money. I didn't make good money, and I didn't get residuals or anything, any endorsements or anything like that. And the first season of Three Sheets, I made. In the year, I made 2,500 times 8. So what is that?
Like 20 grand.
20, yeah.
Are you serious?
Minus agent and lawyer.
Oh shit.
And
man.
Tax. You know whatever. Yeah, you know here I am like
fuck Three Sheets. Let it die. Let it die. Go to the next project.
Yeah. So they
Three Sheets was a great calling card. It's all over the fucking internet.
No, it is. It's great.
It's like Hurt Burt. I did a show called Hurt Burt where I almost died a couple times. And it's like, look, I got paid a lot of money for it because
I remember,
I was an executive producer and I got paid $750 as talent.
That's nice.
And then I got like another check.
Yeah, of course.
For a producer, but the only reason they did that is so I couldn't sue myself.
Right.
That's
awesome.
But it was and like I look back, I'd never do it again. Great calling card.
Yeah.
But Three Sheets led you to a relationship with Travel, which
right.
I remember it airing on Travel.
It did, and then it aired for 5 weeks in 5 different time slots.
Yeah.
And then they ended up taking it off and then selling it to Spike, and Spike tried something similar. But by this point, you know, it was 4 networks later, and they didn't want to do any press and whatever. So I just called up Mark Cuban and said, dude, let's just make a domestic version. I know your budgets aren't that high. Let's go out and make a domestic.
Drinking Made Easy.
Drinking Made Easy.
Now, Drinking Made Easy was you guys.
So me, and now I brought my buddy along, Steve McKenna.
Steve McKenna.
Yeah.
And there was another dude, a dude with the beard.
There was Mark Ryan. And the first season, there was Mark Ryan, another comedian, because I did stand-up at night. I did 53 shows. And then I did TV during the day, 24 episodes.
You were doing stand up at night,
mm-hmm.
and TV during the day,
and all of it involved drinking heavily.
Did you start as a stand up?
No, I didn't.
So you just
I did MC and I did stuff like that, and I've always I'm kind of like a stand up at heart, you know,
and so
it was a very easy sort of transition into like, hey, you know what, we're not doing anything right now. Let's go on tour.
Steven and Ryan.
Mark Ryan is a very good comedian. Not as seasoned on TV.
Yeah. And I will say this. The flip-flop is a lot of guys who can host a TV show could slide into stand-up fairly easily.
Right.
Not a lot of comics can host.
You
only
think
because
that they
it's
could.
A very different muscle.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly, because in stand-up, you're on stage and you're loud and it's all reactionary. And with hosting, it's more, you know, it's smaller. And your jokes have to be you don't have to go set up joke. You can sort of let you have to be yeah. real to let those moments play
you
out.
You got to listen and then a lot of times it's about a tight button. Like yeah. just getting yourself out of the scene.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Know? Yeah, you need to know how to get into the scene.
Yeah.
To go through it and you need to know how you're going to get out. You need to know how to wrap it up. I mean, that's a skill,
a
right?
A lot of it. And then the other big thing that I think that a lot of people don't realize in hosting is and I know you've probably had this a million times, and I know you did definitely in Texas when you did the watermelon with the vodka.
Yeah.
Is when someone's nervous
yeah.
to get them to relax, because that guy sweat through two shirts.
You're absolutely correct.
But to get someone to like when you're talking to someone, you see their lip tremble.
Yeah. Yeah. When someone comes out to meet you and they're like, that happened last weekend. And I went to Adam Carolla's launch party of his Mangria, and on the bill it was like Jason Bateman, Jimmy Kimmel. I mean, like a huge list of all these celebrities. Yeah. And so the publicist sent it out. Would you like to go? I'm like, yeah, I'll go, whatever. And so I arrive. I'm like, I, you know, these are some people I wouldn't mind meeting. And none of them were there. None of them were there. It was me, Ron Jeremy, and Adam.
And he's got to be fun. You got to talk slow around him and you can't make any quick movements.
About who?
Ron Jeremy. He just had a heart attack.
Yeah. He was walking around with a bottle of his rum. And yeah, he looked like you could just like, if you sneezed on him, he would fall over. You know, people are like, wow, he looks old. And then, of course, what do we all do? Go to our phone. Oh, my God, he's 6 years old. He looks good.
Yeah.
The guy can still bang, you know?
Yeah.
I took a picture with him and my buddy Dan Dunn, and I said, I have the second biggest penis in this photo. Guaranteed. Dan's Irish. But so
you're doing stand-up at night.
Stand-up at night, which I'm drinking heavily on stage, because yeah. the more you drink, the more you can go numb on it. And you know what it is? It's like, you know what I wasn't ready for? I had the material, and I did a mini tour through California. I did like 8 cities, really honed it in, but I couldn't hand. There's 2 things I did wrong. One is, it's like I got good at it by the end because I did 50 some shows.
Yeah.
But it was handling the hecklers, and they're not necessarily hecklers as much as they are drunk people yelling stuff out. So I guess that's hecklers. And then the other thing is that I went too long. And I really wanted to give people, because look, on your first tour, you don't make a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, you might sell out. I sold out like House of Blues, Chicago, 1,200 people, whatever it is. And I think I made $5,000 for that night. But I had to pay all my crew,
good God,
all the stand up, and then my
so
bus
you're,
drivers.
You're,
and all
you're
that
booking
kind of
this yourself.
I booked it myself. I didn't make any money on
that. Dude, you are so. You're so ahead of your time in the Hollywood paradigm, because what I mean, like, I to this day, I first of all, I can't sell out House of Blues. I couldn't sell out House of Blues if I fucking tried. Second of all, I wouldn't even know where to begin.
I think they thought that Robin Williams was going to be there. I think they should. No, you know, there were big groups of people. No, I didn't book it myself. Sorry, my agency did it.
But
they did the dates. But I called the bus companies. I rented 2 buses.
You're doing your own.
I did everything
underground
myself.
Promotion.
Like
it's really kind of fucking out of the box. I would fucking get out of TV and get back on stand up. If you can fucking sell tickets,
yeah. But here, but
there's so much more money in stand up.
You're absolutely right. But I did 2 things wrong. I just went a little too long. You know, I cut my teeth on that tour. And I did a second tour, which was way better.
Yeah.
But I had kind of blown my wad a little bit. Like, so I sold out like the 9:30 Club in DC, a big venue.
Yeah, I know the 9:30 Club. Yeah.
And so like,
horrible room to do stand up in, by the way.
It was
because I did a live venue there with a guy named Elliot in the morning.
Did you seat people?
No seating. It was all standing.
Yeah, so we did seats. And Mark Ryan, who's the comedian,
that's not that bad,
then. He goes, dude, do not have people stand. When we have people stand.
Do not have people stand.
They're fidgeting. They're talking. They're having their own little conversations.
Everyone's standing fucking comedy. I don't know, like guys like Patton and Benson and all, a lot of the older dudes that established the, not older, I'm their age, but they established the alternative scene,
yeah,
are very comfortable doing that. Like David Cross is very comfortable doing a standing room only show and like, yeah, and like the Key Club. But I can't imagine.
Does that place still exist?
Fucking,
does that
yeah
place still exist?
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
I met the lead singer of Smash Mouth there. Steve, and then I ran into him in West Nyack, New York.
That's awesome.
But that's fucking. Do you have any? When you signed with your old management company, did you have any aspirations to start doing the road?
No, that's kind of what my goal was. Like for me, I go back and forth. To be on TV is the, I have never used this analogy. I'm gonna see if it works. To be on TV is the bread. To go on tour is the butter. Like I don't make.
Okay, that makes really good sense.
Does it make sense?
Yep. Like really good sense.
I got exposure from doing. And by the way, for anyone who's still listening to the I did 3 seasons of Drinking Made Easy.
Touring
on HDNet, which turned into Access. In a second, I'll tell you how that one ended. So the second season, we didn't do the comedy tour. We cut Mark Ryan, and just me and Steve went around. We did 24 episodes, still ambitious.
Yeah.
Just with the crew, could focus, could actually get good sleep, and could like plan our stuff. And the second season's way better than the first. In my mind, it's different, but I think it's better. And then we did 13 episodes in the last season, plus a 1-hour special and a music special, whatever. And so that I got at least Mark Cuban, you know, gave me the call. He's like, look, we're turning into live music. I can do something live if you want.
Oh,
you can figure
Access.
It out.
I know Access.
Access, yeah.
Yeah, I know them.
I said, well, we could do. I said, I don't know how you turned my show into live, but I threw him some options. We just decided it really wasn't a natural evolution. And so I then decided, hey, I'm going to take it to the fans. A lot of them still talk about Three Sheets. I partnered back up. I tried to get the rights of Three Sheets from Spike, and in the end, I actually got their lawyers on the phone. Me, not my agents. My agents, by the way, said it couldn't be done.
Did you go to college?
I did.
Where?
Cortland State.
Is that New York?
It's south of Syracuse. Yeah.
Yeah. I know Cortland. I think of the show at Cortland State.
It was maybe. It was a party school, but without the educational benefits.
But you seem a lot smarter than the average talent.
Well, I'm
or driven
I'm
or
driven. Old, you know what? Driven is really that's my MO. And we're the same age.
40.
I'm 41. Yeah. IMDb thinks I'm 37.
A lot younger than me.
Well, my wife makes me put on lotion. So I put on this morning. She literally
you ever heard
stood
Bill
there.
Joke about that?
No,
he started dating a black chick, and he goes, she introduced me to lotion. And he goes, I can't believe it. I've never used lotion my whole life. Because yeah. Every black person should pull aside a white person and teach them about lotion.
Yeah.
And in return, we'll teach them how to register firearms. I'm butchering Bill's joke, but I remember I was on the road driving through like fucking Kentucky listening to that, and I doubled over laughing.
This is literally, by the way, thank you. And there's not a lot of light in here, but this is a conversation we had yesterday. My wife made an appointment with my assistant. My wife's office is across from my office.
Yeah.
My assistant is in the middle. Made an appointment. I didn't know what the appointment was. I knew that it was her, but I'm like, okay, I don't understand. I didn't know if it was like about the new show we're doing. And she comes in, she goes, I need to talk to you about lotion. Because, so I work out at a CrossFit. I just started doing that. And Ian Ziering is from 902, Steve Sanders,
is
in my class. The guy I thought was my age, around my age, I could have gone down, I could have gone up.
Dude, he's like 50.
He's 50 and he looks amazing.
Seriously? Yeah, but he probably got like microderm abrasion.
No, he says it, but he's like, that's what you got to do.
Lotion?
But I'm like, well, that's
fucking
whatever
lotion?
You're doing. No, and lotion, I'm sure.
Putting some on right now. I swear to God.
My wife goes, if you want to be tan, just use this cloth. It'll put some color in your face. It's, you know, but you don't have to go out there and lay
fucking
in the sun.
I am allergic to sunscreen.
Yeah.
So I get this thing on my eye. I had it on my nose.
What
at one
is
point.
That? No, I don't even see it.
I'm putting lotion
you
on.
You are
right
putting
now.
Lotion on.
I'm putting on lotion. Fuck it.
Well, so here's what happened. So,
do you drink a lot when you're not shooting the show?
Drink?
Yeah.
Like,
we're going to your. Are we going right after this to your podcast?
Yeah.
Are we going to drink there?
No, because I got to pick my kid up from school.
God, you're a good fucking dad.
But, well, no, it's just that the teachers will smell it on my breath. They can smell it a mile away. They follow me, by the way.
Oh, really?
They follow me on like Twitter and stuff, and they'll walk in and they're like, so how'd this such and such go? I'm like, oh, that's, no, just stop following me.
God, you're a good dad.
I'm a good dad. I am a good dad. I'll take that one. And so the so then we put it to the fans. We started pitching this show called Chug. Travel around the world and learn about drinking, but do it on a train. Not on a train. Literally, I arrive on a train. Woo woo, takes off, and then I'm there. I'm in Rome. You can't get around Rome on trains.
Yeah.
We may drink on the trains. We may if we can find some great stuff, but I don't need the logistics of trying to work it out with moving trains and wrapping up a shoot before you arrive and getting the B-roll and all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
So we pitched it to Spike.
I like the connective tissue of.
It's just it's a funny name.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
And so we, now you smell fantastic, by the way. You smell like,
that's
like
really, smell I think like, there's something in that.
You smell like a coconut.
Like eucalyptus.
Tree. Yes. Something delicious. I'm going to lick your face in a second. But not on the air. That would be gay. And so we pitched it around, you know, Esquire, which is the new G4 and travel and everywhere. And by the way, okay, so everyone passed on it. Close, but it's a pass. And when I met with Travel, so she goes, yeah, I wanted to take the meeting. I heard you had a show. I showed her, busted out my iPad and showed her the pitch. And she's like, I like it. All right, let me take it back whenever I talk about it. And so I said, are you familiar with my stuff? She's like, totally. She's like, I've been following you since the beginning. She's, I was there at Travel when you sent that beer. Because one day, I'm like, oh, the pallet of beer showed up? She goes, 7 pallets of beer. And this is Maui Brewing Company's Coconut Porter, Big Swell IPA, like holy some shit. Really good beers. She's like, everyone's taking it home, and they couldn't get rid of it because like, there was not enough people to carry it all. So like, it lasted for like 3 days. And I was like, wow, it's amazing that no one ever told me this up until now.
Well, yeah, that's
like,
I mean,
like, well, we really weren't allowed to talk to you.
Networks, I kind of have that keep you in the dark is
you
better
have
to way
be.
To,
look, you have.
I mean, yeah,
you have to respect what a network executive or their underlings do, and all they're trying to do is keep their job. They are. I mean, yeah. Look, and I respect that because they
me
have families
too.
And they have everything.
yeah.
And it's like, I don't think that they're like these a person with a suit that just likes to say no to things. No, they want to find something to say yes to. They just can't afford to take too many risks. And so we thought we had it wrapped up. We thought we had a show that made sense. In the end, they said no. I called up Spike to get the rights to Three Sheets. They said, well, I just talked through a burp. Did you get that?
I did.
Talked right through. and so they said, look, we can maybe talk about that, but it's going to cost more than you're talking about. And I was talking like, you know, 10, 20 grand. And they said, but you could only air it on the web. So I couldn't take it let's say it was amazing. The Kickstarter backers, they're the ones that get to see it. Yeah. So I'm making it right now. They're my bosses. I'm making it for them. And so what if it's so good, now we take it around, and G4, the new Esquire, or Travel want it. Like, this is good. This is a new twist. We didn't expect this. This is great.
Yeah.
But it's called Three Sheets, and we can't air it. So we said, okay, look, it's just too much red tape. Let's make it different enough that Spike doesn't feel like we're infringing on the format of it. I mean, there's travel shows are nothing new. Guy goes around, eats, guy goes around and drinks. Guy going around drinking, traveling, is not a format.
Just you and Steve or just
no,
you?
Just me.
Okay.
And so I then called up the executive producer and the creative guy behind Three Sheets. He wrote them, sat in all the edit sessions. He's the guy that made them all happen. And his name's Mike Kelly. And I said, hey, I started telling him, I go, dude, I want to do a show called Chug. I think I said the word chug. And he's like, I'm in.
Yeah.
He's like, I've worked on so many projects since Three Sheets, but it's by far my favorite experience. I had fun. I felt like we were making something that people loved. I felt like we were, you know, learning
that's,
and da da da.
Half the fucking that is half the battle of making TV is making it fun for the people shooting it. If you have fun shooting it, your show's going to be better.
Yeah.
Everything's going to be better.
Yeah.
If I've been on projects where you're like, get me the fuck out of here, and it shows.
When you can't engage with the crew. It makes it really weird.
Yeah.
Some people have said, no, don't engage with the crew. I'm like, well, I mean, they're the only person in the room right now, yeah. and they're my friend, and like whatever. And so in Three Sheets, there was a lot of that. We like to think that we sort of started that movement, you know, whatever. And it's because we really started involving them and then making them do shots and whatever. And who's I mean, the crew by themselves, not carrying camera gear, would get stopped at the airports. Are you Eric the sound guy? Are you Curtis the sound? And they would always get them mixed up. And so Mike said he was in. I said, good, you're the missing piece. Go check out the preview for our Kickstarter. He says, I love it. He wanted to write a letter to people, and like he's done that and stuff. And so we're now doing that. So now we are trying to raise $500,000. We wanted to raise $1 million because we wanted to make 10 episodes.
Yeah.
But we said, let's put it at $500,000 to make six.
By the way, which, and I will say this, because I think people probably go, $500,000, why can't you do it for 20?
Right.
Well, TV is not, TV is a different beast than like a documentary or like I did a documentary, we raised, I think, 40 grand.
Right.
And so, but all we needed to do literally was buy the equipment that we needed,
right.
and then buy a few plane tickets so they could follow me. I was already on the road.
Yeah.
I was already doing this. There was no production value. We didn't need to research. We didn't need to fucking reach out to anyone.
Right.
They just followed me doing stand-up for a year. And so...
Yeah. See, that's the benefit of doing something that you're already doing that's paying its way.
Yeah, like, to put it in perspective, I think Hurt Burt, I think every episode cost $175,000 to make.
Right, okay.
So and then...
And that's, by the way, kind of on the low end.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So that's it's a safe number.
We take 500,000, give 10% to Kickstarter, 5 to Kickstarter, 5 to Amazon because they handle the transaction at the end. Then you end up with 450. And then you have to buy everyone the rewards that you promised them.
Yes.
T-shirts, sweatshirts, yes, parties, yes. All that kind of stuff.
Signed memorabilia, I mean, a private workout in your man cave.
By the way, it's all shipping. The major cost is shipping. It's like the T-shirt maybe cost me $5-6. The shipping of it maybe cost me $3-4. And so you're like, that's expensive.
Yeah.
We get those down, but you know, we can get the price of the shirts down, but not the shipping. You can't, you know, we're not big enough that the you know, USPS gives a shit about us. And so then you end up with maybe if you're lucky, $375. And then I have my 5 employees in my office now. And then they pre-produce. They'll call the countries and coordinate it. Have to hire somebody, a driver and a fixer, which is
you can't hire local sound in any of those places.
No, you can't.
Sound cameras. You using 2 cameras?
You have to fly. Yep, 2 cameras.
2 cameras. You got to produce on.
Fly them all in.
Put them all up. Feed them.
And
hope
and,
you don't go over overtime.
And still, yeah, exactly. And still give them per diem. And and then come back and then hire your next crew, your post-production writer.
That's where
producer.
That's where the real money is spent. Shooting it, you can probably get away shooting it cheap, but post-production is a fucking, if you want it to look good, is expensive.
Editors are, if they're good, they cost money. And it's a very easy skill to show. You're like, here's what I've done. Okay, here's what you get paid, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we got quoted like $3,000-$5,000 a week for these guys.
Fucking.
So, and you don't want to like stinge on that. So you got to kind of figure out where you fight your battles. And in the end, you know, we raised $500,000. I'm not making a penny. I'm really not making a penny. I'm hoping that so by the way, people are like, why don't you put your own money in? And I'm like, well, first of all, this campaign is like it's like 6 weeks long. What about the people that I'm paying for 6 weeks? All the money I hired a publicist.
Yeah.
You know, I have all my employees that are working on promoting this campaign and like all this stuff. So
lot of people think that, and I'll say this, that I started my Kickstarter campaign probably well over a year ago. About a year and a half. Jesus Christ.
Did you get a lot of shit for that then?
What?
Did you get a lot of shit because you're a rich TV guy?
Yeah.
Right?
Why don't you just make it yourself? And I was like, because I'm not.
Yeah.
So I'm putting it on Kickstarter. Yeah. If you want to do it, we can do it. I don't need to do this fucking documentary, but I thought it would be fun. And this is how we're going to do it. And
why
if
are you
be a
asking
part of it,
me? If you want to pledge. But don't
friend,
give me shit about it. Who are you?
I had a friend.
The police
who,
of the internet?
I asked him to retweet it. And he goes, are you fucking kidding me? You want me to retweet so you can make money off of my fans? And I was like, he's like, is that what you're saying? I was like, that's exactly what I'm saying. I said, that is the words to the T that I'm asking. What? I'm asking your friends, your fans.
In fact, I think that's how I phrased it, asshole.
When he said that, I was like, oh my God, this guy isn't my fucking, like, what? Yes, that is exactly what I'm saying. You're my friend. I'm leveraging our friendship so I can make a fucking documentary.
And what did he say?
He said no. He wouldn't do it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I started hitting up people that I knew, like Andrew Zimmern. Boom. I mean, he's like, yeah, dude, anything I can do to help, let me know. And he's a good guy.
He's a good, great. He's a great guy.
And Adam Richman. And, you know, people that I see around. And then, you know, who said no was Guy, I'm not going to say Fieri. I'm going to say Guy Fieri because that's the way that it's spelled. Yeah, Guy through his people said no. You know, I've met him. We've had run-ins and stuff like that. We're not like the warmest of friends, but you know, I sent him some swag a month before. But by the way, before it was even a concept.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, maybe he can just tweet it. He's like, no, people will think it's all scammy and da da da. I'm like, because he said people. This is the manager talking. Because people ask us all the time. I'm like, well, I'm not just anybody.
Yeah.
This isn't scammy, but I thought there was like some sort of brother code thing that we had because we're, you know, aren't we all fighting the same fight? But you know, whatever. Now it's funny because I didn't hit up Bourdain. Do you know Bourdain?
Nope.
Let me tell you about, can I tell a fun story?
Yeah, please.
So I was doing Three Sheets. This is in the heyday, right? So maybe after the second season, this is when we knew we were onto something. Travel Channel, no, sorry. Food Network says, we want Three Sheets with food and we want Zane for it. So we happen to be going to Japan. We said, hey, we'll go and shoot the pilot in Japan. This amazing, ridiculous sushi place. Like the top guy, one of the top guys in Japan.
Have you had the poisonous blowfish?
No.
Okay, I thought that was something that you would have had fucking
no, I'm
in your life.
I'm a little, I have a family. Yeah. I can't do, you know what I mean? I can't take that risk.
Yeah. So wait, keep going. I don't mean to interrupt. Everyone
no,
says
no,
I don't
please,
listen and interrupt.
What I do.
Keep going.
No, I'm an interrupter. It's how you keep it organic.
Yeah, I can't fucking.
A good host
yeah.
has to be. You can't sit back and wait for the whole thing to
Who
come to
listens
you.
And listens? I listen to think of what I'm going to say next.
Shh, no one admits that.
Yeah.
So I went and did the three, it was called Half Fork Will Travel. Originally, it was called Half The Hungry Fork. Traveler, by the way, which is funny because there was a Thirsty Traveler. But this was called The Hungry Traveler. When it came out, they called it Half Fork Will Travel. We shot a season. And
I think I have seen that.
In that period of time, the guy who was championing us over there left, was let go, whatever it was. And so we had a new, younger guy come in. And again, as I was explaining, he was just doing what he knew how. He was trying to assert himself into it as per what he – you try to give the note that you think the person above you is going to get. So that's all they're trying to do is give the note so that the person above him isn't like, why didn't you give this note? So that's the notes.
Gave it.
Yeah. Not like
you took the words out of my mouth.
You're so good. We're giving you a raise.
Do you want anything to drink?
I'd love it.
Diet Coke?
Sure. That's my vice. That's the vice I allow myself. And so I went and did the show. Before it aired, Us Weekly, Entertainment Weekly, Star, all gave it 4 out of 5 stars or 3 out of 4 stars, whatever they had to offer.
Yeah.
But got great reviews, whatever. Then it came out, and apparently the foodies were mad at me because my whole thing is I'm not an expert. I'm just a guy. I'm going to give every guy's perspective. And that's what I do with drinking, too. Even with Three Sheets, I didn't want to know what I was walking into until the moment I walked in.
Yeah.
Here's the guy's name. He makes this concoction. It's been in his family for 5 years and da-da-da-da. Great. I walk in so that I'm like, what is this stuff? Not, you know, as opposed to somebody like Bourdain who, like, knows all about it.
Knows
oh, this,
the guys,
these are the
yeah.
pigs that are raised in such and such and da-da-da-da. And then the guy doesn't have to explain it himself. I'd rather have the person who invented it or walk me through it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did that.
You kind of want to be hungry for knowledge and curious. You're the curious traveler. You're not the guy in the know.
Exactly. I didn't feel like I could. Now, by the way, you and I both know the way that these scenes work. I could have walked into this scene, like, with these these French cookies that I went and featured, and I could have read all about them.
Gotten the one page right before you walked in, like a lot of shows.
I could have known more about those cookies than the guy whose family's been making them and looked online.
For the record, and I hate to fucking pull the veil back, but there a lot of times in television, and I've done this in pilots, where they'll give you the information, you'll go to do the interview, and the guy doing the interview goes, I don't know, let me see your sheet, and he has to read off sheet.
Absolutely, that's happened.
Yeah, so you're like, so yes, but instead you're
and
going
to And then you
in.
Let him, and then you say, okay, I'm going to ask a question, here we go, and go, you know, whatever. So I did it. There's one instance that I remember, and I think this is what got referenced, as I went to Marseille, the south of France, Provence, I'm saying all these like hoity-toity words, but Marseille is a city on the ocean, on the Mediterranean. We did some things there with the Michelin chef and the cookies that I mentioned, and then a bouillabaisse. And bouillabaisse, for people who don't know, I guess the whole fucking world knows what bouillabaisse is because Bourdain tore me an asshole for it.
What?
But bouillabaisse is a fish reduction, right? So they take fish and they throw it into a pot.
It's amazing.
And then
shit I'd tear an asshole for would not be bouillabaisse.
No, you cannot. No, how dare he not know?
Fucking bouillabaisse.
And so I wish I could read the interview. And so...
It's so, not, you can't find it?
No, I can find it. I don't know. I've tried to find it.
Fucking I'll find it right now. Find it.
Chicago, it was a Chicago interview, maybe the Chicago Tribune, Bourdain, so maybe like 08, 09, something like that, 08. And so he said, so anyway, so this guy's teaching me how to make bouillabaisse, and he reduces the fish. Throw all this fish in, all the parts of a fish, and you boil it and you reduce it. Then you dump out the fish, mm-hmm. and then you keep reducing, reducing, reducing. So I said, okay, so it's like a really fishy, fishy, fishy stew because it's like super fishy because you keep reducing it and increasing the robustness of the flavor. And so that happened. Then later on I went to this gay couple's house in Provence, and they have – it's a chateau. It is like 500 years old, and they rent it, and then I think it's like a landmark, right? So they're allowed to do their stuff there. I don't think they live maybe they live in part of it, whatever. And then they teach this class. And so I went there at about like noon, and I left there at 3 in the morning. Okay, I hung out with these guys all day.
Yeah,
had an amazing time. And just like you and I, you and I should have met years ago, by the way.
Yeah.
But we just met, and it's been an hour, and you and I already have inside jokes. Imagine if we were hanging out, cooking, drinking for 14 hours. Imagine how comfortable we would be with each other.
Yeah.
So by the time we actually got to cooking and with these guys, we were like making fun of each other and having fun and just, you know, joking around. And the guy he does his measurements like this. He takes and he goes, thump, like that. Yeah. Or if it's two, he goes, thump, thump.
Yeah.
And so he goes, oh, now you pour it in. And I go, was it a thump or a thump, thump? And that's the only thing I can think of to reference the article that I'm about to bring up. So, and did you find it? Maybe like, I'm trying to think of another Q word you can put in there, like Zane.
Anthony Bourdain is the bluntest of writers. In his ninth book, No Reservations. No. Hang on one second. You've created many genres. There's Dangerous, like Where? What's the favorite? Next page. Yeah.
I think it was a short article, but what he said was, he goes, this is somebody who knows nothing about food, called bouillabaisse a fishy, fishy stew, and then goes on to make fun of everyone's accents. He says the guy is completely unwatchable. It's a horrible show. And I'm like, you fucking asshole. Like, don't feel threatened by me if that's where this is coming from you. Like, I'm a guy that I am not pretending to be something that I'm not. I'm just a guy out there doing this. How can you shit on me for working as hard as I can and doing the best job that I know how, and then you go out there and you shit on me in public? I know that's what he does, right? So I don't know if it's a badge of honor.
It's his thing. It's punk rock. It's
fucked up. And
like he does that to everyone. I don't think you know. It's just like me wavering on making an opinion on whether or not I like somebody. Like I just, it's what I do. It's, you know, like he, it's his thing. I know he attacked
Paula Deen. He's attacked Rachel Ray. He's attacked a bunch of people.
He attacked a bunch of people. It's his
thing.
But
you know what? Hey, but they're,
we get it.
But
I can't wait till my turn's up.
But those are established people that if their shows went away right now, they would be fine forever. I was on the brink of trying to get this show going. And maybe an endorsement from Anthony Bourdain would have actually changed that and had to continue. But alas, it didn't. I'm not saying that it was him that did it.
No, I know what you're saying. What you're saying is the same thing. It's the opposite of when you get trolled on the internet is when you get a bad response from a guy you look up to.
Right.
It really kind of hurts your feelings. It's like, hey, listen,
exactly what it was.
You're just a regular fucking person. I like Anthony Bourdain too. I can promise you. I can promise you in all certainty that my name has been referenced by him if not not that he knows who the fuck I am, but we were on the same network for four years.
Of course he does.
I'm sure he didn't look at Bert the Conqueror as something he wanted on the network that he shared. I'm sure he didn't want his viewers going, who's this guy who rides roller coasters? You know, like, but that's his thing.
I know, but
my thing is I just wanted to drink with the guy. That's it.
You know what's funny is so truth be told, when I read this when it came out, my publicist at the time sent it to me, and I happened to be shooting the show or shooting something in Hawaii, and he was on the same island, so I wanted to find him.
Yeah.
I just wanted to find him, and it's like, what am I going to do?
He'd probably be nice as shit. You know, it's a lot of things. The other thing is, you know, it's a conversation he probably had in an interview with the writer, and he said something thinking it would never get to the thing.
I mean, I appreciate that you saying that. However, so at one point I reached out to him, I think on Twitter or something like that. This is probably a year ago. And I'm like, why would you say those things? You know, and he's like, and I said something about, you know, Three Sheets, and he's like, Three Sheets was great, Half Fork wasn't. And I'm like, so that's a compliment right there? I don't know, it's just weird. And then I saw him briefly in Miami and just said,
well,
hey,
you know, I think sometimes
I wish he was like you and I were the same age, same height. Like, I wish he was like just like us, so I could smack him in the face, like just bitch slap him. Like, you know what? That is a taste of what else I have in store for you.
Something tells me a guy like that can fight for some reason. Though. Yeah. My Bourdain? Feeling to be getting beat up by a chef.
No.
Everyone's like, did you see that fucking pastry chef kick the shit out of Bert? He fucking curb stomped him and then put
it's like a cheerleader like beating the shit out of me.
Like, oh. I bit myself as a beer drinking regular dude, and if I got beat up by a guy who went to culinary school,
yeah.
I'd be fucking, nowadays, all fucking chefs. Action Bronson was a chef. Fucking every thug in the world that's sleeved in tattoos is a chef.
But by the way, if you're a chef, chefs do have a pomposity and arrogance to them. I dare say that they have to, in a way.
Yeah.
I've met some that aren't, you know. Like,
I would take it with a grain of fucking salt. Like, you know, like...
Dude, I'm not harboring it. I'll let it go. And give me another 5 years. I'll probably let it go. I'm honest with you. I like telling the story because, you know what? In a way, that's the best acknowledgement that I got for what I was doing at the time. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it was here and gone, and I continue to try to get people to pay me to drink.
It's better than making a TV show in obscurity that no one fucking sees and no one pays attention to and no one acknowledges.
You know, I just got offered this TV show. I think it was like TBS or TNT, one of those, and it was one of those interlude shows, and it wasn't a bad deal. It just would have tied me up, and I didn't want to do it. You know what I mean? It probably would have gotten me more eyeballs, but they wouldn't have been focused eyeballs. It wouldn't have been like I could have done anything with it. It would have been like, yeah,
you're past that. In my opinion, of you know what you
we'll see. By the way, we'll see if Chug is chugging along and we're about halfway there in money and halfway there in days.
You'll have one big push. That's how these work.
I can't push it now. I have to push it when there's 7 days left.
No,
when I push my family. Like, yeah. I went and typed the word Lamprey, okay? Like, you can go and search for backers, right?
Yeah.
So I typed in Lamprey. I'm like, let's see these motherfuckers. And sure enough, my brother, $100. That son of a bitch. I didn't know he did that. You would think he'd tell me because you'd think he would, like, sort of be, like, bragging about it. But he did it, and he didn't tell me. Older.
Oh.
And so he did it. And I'm like, Mom, you son of a – or you bitch.
Yeah.
You are the bitch. And I typed in my sister's maiden name, her married name. I'm like, oh, Amy.
I'll tell you how ours funded. We were fucking floundering for a little while, and then I released this shirt that I now sell, but it was at the time it was a special edition machine shirt where it was my face and the Russian propaganda art. And so I re-released that, and I brought it up on Rogan's, and I said for like a $730 donation, you get all these things, and we've now just added this shirt, and we fucking met her that day.
Huh.
And then
how many days left?
We had like I want to say, I'm gonna fucking guess. My producers would be like, I'm gonna say like 20, and then we met it, and then we were like, well, let's keep raising money, and then we went over it.
Oh, nice.
And even still with that money, we still spent an extra 13 grand
of our money. People think I'm not going to put my own money into it.
Yeah.
I might have to put my own money into it, which I don't think is technically legal, to push the train over
the
hill.
We had a couple guys. Tyler Glenn from the band The Neon Trees was a big fucking backer. Like, he dropped some big money. Yeah. And I was like, to this day, I owe that guy. But
right now, we're going after corporate sponsors because we didn't think about it in the beginning. We're not going to put ads in.
Mm-hmm.
That gets really hairy. And what we're going to do is put title cards in the beginning and the end of the show. In the beginning, it's $2,500. This show is brought to you by Burt's Beer.
Yeah.
And then it's 5-second title cards.
Or the Machine Vodka. When's this going to air? I'll fucking throw some Machine Vodka money in it.
Do you have a vodka coming out?
I'm buying a vodka. I'm in the process. I've signed a non-disclosure, and I still talk about it like fucking crazy.
Well, we should non-disclosurely have a conversation about that, because I have a rum.
Do you really?
That I started 2 years ago, Monkey Rum.
Yeah.
I went on, made sure I had monkeyrum.com. I had to pay. I had to actually have somebody I know go and buy it so they couldn't figure out who I was.
Yeah.
I got the Facebook and I got the Twitter, which, you know, and the URL.
My fans are fucking amazing. My fans, I brought it up on Rogan's podcast one time.
They went and got it for you?
Everyone got, they got everything. Email me all the info stuff.
That's nice.
There you go.
That's nice.
It's the fucking... It's the Death Squad fucking community.
Yeah.
They're the coolest dudes in the world.
I have a very similar fan base. Mine are probably better looking, but that doesn't matter. Don't get caught up in that shit.
My fans are from fucking Rogan. They can choke out everybody.
Your fans can beat up my fans. It's not a big deal. But you know what?
And they can outsmoke your fans.
Yeah. But mine will drink yours under the table. Trust me, because they challenge me to that every day. It's a huge great fan base, but there's just those few little stinkers in there that trolls are perfect.
You just want
to ignore them, but you can't.
If you don't read it, it didn't happen.
Yeah, you can't unread it. It used to upset me a lot more. I honestly really don't get upset because I don't care. You know why? Because I know where it's coming from. That allows me to easily dismiss it. And so I can hide it, or I can block the person, ban them, whatever I want. But if, you know, sometimes I can disarm anybody. No one's going to say, oh, Lamper, you're trying to get my money to travel around. Fuck you, da da da. I've had that before, and I sent the guy an email, and he says, do you want me to apologize online? I'm like, no, dude, don't worry about it. I'm just a fucking dude, man.
I'm just a guy
that's trying. Don't think that just because I'm on TV or have a fucking awesome podcast, because everyone knows if you have a podcast, you've made it. Anyway, so because not everyone can get a podcast, let's be honest. But like, you know, it's just, we're just regular guys, you know, just struggling, trying to figure it out.
All you want to do, and I said this the other day on stage, and I was like, in just a moment of like, I was also drunk, and it was Baltimore. I was like, you get to a certain point as a man where you go, oh, none of this fucking matters. We're all the same in that we just want to provide for our family.
Right.
We just want to like wake up on Sunday mornings and have our kids jump in bed with us and go to the park and go to the beach and have out and literally just be happy. Grill out at night.
Right.
Just like everyone else does.
Right.
That's the same thing. The difference is I have put myself out there for people to either A, want to drink with, B, want to watch drink, or C, fucking tear down. And so you just got to be comfortable with, you know, it's like I get a fucking 1,000 great replies and that one fucking shitty one sticks in your head. Well, I've decided simply just it didn't happen.
Right.
It didn't happen. I don't block them. If you want to be like that, you can be like that. A lot of them are trolls. The last one I've read was probably like 6 months ago, that it was something negative. And I clicked on it and I went, that's shitty. And then I looked and I was like, oh, the one before him was Jen Kirkman, then Sarah Silverman. Then he's just throwing fucking Molotov cocktails that aren't lit,
trying to
see if they catch on fire.
And by the way, it's literally 1 in 1,000.
Yep.
But
I actually thought maybe I should start an account and start trolling people. I wonder how good it feels. Just to like fucking fuck you, Lamprey.
No, dude, you know how
Bourdain's a fucking god. You're a nobody. And then just watch you come back and go, ooh, I got under his skin.
You know, I mean, you know where, like, again, you know where it's coming from. You and I, look, right now we're at your house.
Yeah.
This is a nice place. I'm sure if being where it is, it's just so funny because this is a nice place. This is very similar to the house I grew up in.
Yeah.
But the house I grew up in would probably not fetch $200,000. That's not how you want. If you want a little bit of green space out here and an orange tree, that must have cost you a shit ton to get a space for an orange tree.
Oh, yeah. That orange tree's a pain in the ass because the squirrels eat the oranges and then drop them on that beautiful couch. Yeah, well, but
squirrels are assholes wherever you go. That's not my point.
That orange tree was there before. I've got to get rid of this fucking... My gardener came out today. He's like 90 years old.
So you got a gardener. Who's going to feel bad for you? You guys got a gardener.
He came at the house. And he's on a fixed income, and we can't afford him. And he does a horrible job. He was here. Literally, he was here
no, I love it.
5 minutes ago. Literally,
all of a sudden, he's a burden. That's amazing.
He's in the back.
Wait a second. He's
in the backyard eating loquats. I got a kumquat tree. He's in the backyard eating kumquats. And I was like, I didn't know you could eat those.
Doesn't look like he... I mean, I look at the lawn, and it doesn't look like he was here.
Exactly.
When a house cleaner comes, you want to walk in and be like, this is amazing.
Dude, we can't afford our fucking house cleaners. We got a maid.
Yeah.
We can't afford her either. And I went to fire her. She started crying. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm not firing her.
That's what happened when I fired my first manager. The story I was telling you before.
Oh.
But anyway, that's the point. That's the point is that we put ourselves out there. People look at us. Look, as many problems as we have, it's not... These are not big problems in the grand scheme of things. It's very enviable what it is that we do. It's easy to take a shit on it if you don't know us and hope that we're assholes.
Yeah.
I've known about you for a long time. I really hoped that you were a dick.
Right now,
I'm on the bubble.
I'm probably nice to a fault.
Yeah, I am too. That was actually a question I'm going to ask. Now we're going to go over and do my podcast.
Yeah, so now...
I'm going to start with... Two things I'm going to cover is,
A. It'd be great if you just fucking blindsided me.
Do you feel like you... No, yeah. I'm going to be a dick all of a sudden. Lampert, when you were in my house, you were nice. You're worse than Bourdain.
Do you post your podcast the day of? I'll post this one tonight.
Yeah, so I'll probably put up... It'll probably be on next week. I don't know. I have to talk to Tyler. He's like Bourdain. He's old and angry. So I'm going to ask you if you think that that nice guys finish last out here. That's the first one. And then the next one is like, why is it that every celebrity I have on my show doesn't drink anymore?
Oh, fuck.
Okay, those are the two questions.
My whole shock is that we're not drinking on your show. I was literally going to order an Uber to go to yours to fucking put back beers. I'd already said to my kids, I won't see them.
We'll have a beer. Actually, you know what? We actually may have a surprise there for you.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, is it Anthony Bourdain? Now,
I know you, yes.
Now everyone should just do a big push to get Bourdain on Lamprey's podcast.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
You know what? And again, you're right. It could have been taken out of context. I don't know.
I can't say one way or the other. I don't know him, so I can't be like, oh, you know, he's a good guy.
He doesn't have the best reputation of being a nice person.
It's his thing.
But it's his thing.
I'm sure he tore down Guy Fieri.
You know what? They can have it each other. That's fine.
Fine. What was that? You know what I've been dying to ask? Where did the name Zane come from?
Can we ask that off the air?
Yeah. Are you serious?
Because you know why? It's a good story.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, it is. But I have to keep... I want to keep this charade.
The charade?
Yeah. You know what? Here, I'm going to give you the honest answer, but you can edit this. Ask me again.
No, don't, because I don't want to fucking edit anything. Just tell me off air.
The truth is... is that my dad was a huge fan of Westerns and Zane Grey.
Yeah.
So he loves Zane Grey as a writer. And so he named me Zane. And then my brother got Dan and my sister got Amy. And they always complain about how they got normal names. This is true. And so I said to my brother, I said, why don't you just add an E to the end of your name? Why don't you just be Dane? He's like, oh, because then I'd be an asshole. I don't know what that means.
I think that's it. That's probably an hour.
People know to go to Kickstarter. And
hold
then
on,
just
hold
type
on. Let's give
Chug.
All the real information about that. So we're at Oh, are we really at it? No. We're just over an hour. So where is everyone? Where can everyone get all the information?
It's really simple. just go to www.chug.tv. And then that brings you to the Kickstarter page. And that will be where the show lives if when it gets funded. I have faith.
I think it will.
You know what's amazing?
If you're halfway there this
far. Everybody I know, all my friends are going to be like, yeah, I want to chip in because I want to see the show. Because look, if you spend $25, then you get emailed the digital download every week. So for 6 weeks, you get a new episode every week.
So, okay. So that is worth the price right there.
I think it is.
So $25 is easy. What do you get for like, what's your $50?
So 35 gets you a t-shirt, a cool t-shirt. 50 gets you
$35's a cool t-shirt. That's fiscally makes 100% sense.
This one does. What doesn't? No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't make sense for me because 25 gets you the download, and basically that doesn't really cost us that much, you know, just to process that. But then the 35 gets you a t-shirt, and but the t-shirt's shipping and t-shirt costs me 10.
Yeah. So you're not making any money on the t-shirt.
Right, but most people are going for the upgraded, like one of those sport gray American Apparel shirts.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. It just has Chug on it. It's pretty cool. That's 50.
I definitely spend the extra money and get the nicer t-shirt.
Yeah, it's an awesome t-shirt. I mean, it's actually, I have them for Drinking Made Easy. I made some myself with the American Apparel, and I love them. And so, but they're expensive, you know? They're like $7-$8 to just buy the blank t-shirt.
I wonder if I'm on TV anytime soon.
Wear it.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, give me a Chug shirt and I'll just wear it on TV.
Well, they don't exist yet.
Oh, fuck. But okay, and so then what's the ridiculous package?
Yeah, so the ridiculous package is $10,000.
What do you get?
You get to be on the show. So we're not going to fly you. We're not going to put you up.
Okay.
But we'll tell you, hey, so there's two people that have done it. So the first person is like, let's say we go, hey, look, first person, here's a list, 6 episodes, Melbourne, Sydney, Shanghai, you know, whatever, pick one. And they'll pick, okay, Melbourne. Okay, great. You picked it. That's it. We go to the next person. What do you get? And then we'll tell that person where they can be, and they'll be in a scene. So there'll be a scene where they'll be mic'd up and they'll be in the scene, and they're not going to be nervous because we're going to hang out with them. They'll drink. They'll be fine.
You'll probably be with them the night before having drinks.
Yeah. And so, and then.
And they'll get to hang out with the crew.
And then, like, it's sort of like the unwritten thing. If they're cool, then they can come and watch some of the other stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, as long as they're not, like, drunk and want to, like, shout things out, which I can't imagine someone that's spending that kind of money would want to ruin their own experience.
No, you're going to. The $10,000 people are going to be the fucking big ones. Now, what's the price package?
I'll tell you the best one.
Okay.
The best one is $1,000.
Okay.
And it sounds like a lot of money, but here's what you get. So you get to, you get the shirt, the good shirt.
Nice.
You get the Blu-ray and DVD combo set.
Okay.
You get a hoodie. You get this amazing, it's a long story, but if you go on Chug, you can read about it. A medallion. Like, I once got presented a medallion when I was in Portugal.
Yeah.
And it was so amazing. Like, I literally, like, this club inducted me, and I literally, like, fought back crying because it was so amazing. Like, it was an amazing medallion. I'm like, I have to figure out a way to give this to people. So there's that. There's a signed poster. There's, like, I think that I follow you on Twitter for a year. And then you get you and a guest get to come and party with me, either L.A., New York or Chicago.
For one of the viewings?
For the viewing, for the original airing.
I just realized in doing this whole podcast that all I'm going to get this entire podcast is my fans going, yeah, great. Great to hear about Zane's. When's your fucking Kickstarter going to show up?
Because
we're still editing. We've been editing for like a year.
I just realized. They say that happened. They let people know to expect that. But
yeah.
But we, you know, we want to get ours out quick because we want to get it to the networks while the heat's still on.
Well, TV turnaround's a lot different because there's a format. Documentary, you got to
figure out.
No,
you're right.
We've got so much fucking
footage.
You
have to say, what did we shoot and what did we do with it? Because can make 5 different documentaries out of what you shot.
Well, and we're going to make this, and then we're going to have a screening where it's me and the two guys, and then I'm going to take a look at it and see. Like, I told them, I go, I don't want to be a part of it, but then I started getting nervous because I was fucking drunk the entire time. I don't know what the fuck I said.
Yeah,
I definitely know one chick was hitting on me, and I was definitely enjoying the fact that I was getting hit on, and I was talking about it on camera because they're my friends, and then I'm like, holy shit, I don't know if I want everyone to see that.
Yeah.
So,
for the thousand, there's also you and a friend come to dinner. Now, I can't give alcohol. Otherwise, I give people monkey rum, you know, at different levels, but I can't do that. But people that come to dinner, like, I'm paying for dinner. So that's two people coming to dinner. So that's two people. So it's basically 500 $50 a person. But then you also get to come to the party afterwards. That's a $500 thing, so that's $250. So it just starts to break down. When you spend
$500
or $1,000, if you can get to one of these parties, you end up with like a huge gift bag of all kinds of cool stuff.
Dude, when we did my Kickstarter barbecue at my house.
Did you really? How many people?
I forget, like 20 people.
I actually, one of the rewards is a barbecue at your house.
Yeah.
I'm going to go. No. On my
for yours?
Yes.
Oh,
I'm going to go and add it.
I had two. I had barbecue at my house and a private workout session in my man cave.
You did?
Yeah.
Did you actually do exercise?
No, the guy was like, don't worry, I just want to come to the barbecue. And I think he just came to the barbecue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was like, I appreciate the man cave. But he goes, I just wanted to support it. That's the one thing is that once you do get into these things, it's almost like getting a home team. You're rooting for the show to succeed.
I'm just trying to figure out how we're going to fit because I haven't added this yet, but I'm probably going to do a barbecue at your house. So I'm sort of surveying outside.
Well, those loquats are edible, so
I'm gonna don't think I'm not gonna include you. There is nothing against kumquats or loquats, whatever the hell
fuck quad it is. Hey, wait, what projects have we been up for that are similar?
Okay, so I was up for what was the one that you went and took people on vacation? You went like trip flip.
I'm doing that now. Yeah,
yeah. So I was up for that.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a great show. You should have gotten it. It's the fucking greatest show in the world. It's the greatest fucking show in the world.
I like to think that we were at least close. I was in the running for. I've been pushed out by John O'Hurley.
I don't know who that is.
He was the guy in Seinfeld who talked. He was the boss. Elaine, come in. He's the guy.
That guy.
The weird guy. Yeah, not with the cool voice.
Yeah,
the distinctive
voice.
Yeah. And so that was a show that won an episode. Ben Bailey, who I think's awesome.
Ben Bailey's awesome.
So it was literally they brought both of us in, and he got it, and that just went to pilot and didn't go anywhere.
Okay.
Chris Kattan. And Joe Rogan. Both that was the same project.
What?
It was between me and Joe, and then me and Chris, and they ended up going with names. It was like something about you, like
hunting Bigfoots.
No, you. I don't know. You go and put a ear, like a thing in a person's ear, and then you
about.
Tell them.
Yeah.
To,
I know what you're talking
stuff.
About. It's like a prank show, but
yeah.
you're telling them what to do.
Yeah.
Or it's like, yeah, I know. I remember. I saw a little bit of that. I tested for a pilot at CBS where I was going to play the dad, and in the room to read was me, Gary Valentine, and Chris Kattan. And I was like, I can't imagine
right.
Chris Kattan as a dad.
Dad of, yeah.
Like on CBS.
Yeah,
that's like,
yeah.
That looks like.
Who's,
I can't,
the, who's the Valentine guy?
Gary Valentine. He was.
Is he the dad from Brady Bunch? No.
Gary Valentine is Kevin James's brother. He's a stand-up comedian.
Okay.
He was. We used to do a show called The X Show on FX back in the fucking day.
Mm.
And me and him were the co-hosts. Me, him, Daphne Brognan, and Craig J. Jackson. But yeah, my favorite one that I ever got was I was up for a show against Chris Hardwick, and it was a bowling celebrity bowling show.
Oh wow!
And Chris Hardwick's dad was a professional bowler, and they chose me, not realizing his dad that he knows everything about fucking bowling, and
right.
I know nothing. And in the middle of
how did that information not get out?
I do not know. But in the middle of making this pilot where we are fucking it up left and right and everyone's panicking and everyone's scrambling because I don't know anything about bowling at all. And they realize this and it's more complicated. And I go, guys, you guys should have gone with Chris Hardwick. And they're like, why? And they're like, I go, his dad's like one of the best professional bowlers ever. And they're like, are you fucking kidding me? I was
get him on the phone.
Billy Hardwick? And they're like, they were like, I've done some really great shit pilots. Some hardcore, shitty, fucking awesome pilots. Like, I did one where I searched for the world's best dancing dog.
That was the whole show?
Yep.
Wow.
A series.
I did one. That's amazing. I did one for History Channel that I thought was such a shoo-in. It was called Night After, something After Dark, whatever. And it was Dirty Jobs at Night from the producers of Dirty Jobs.
It's like Insomniac.
And so, yeah. And so they wanted to call it
Night Shift.
I called it Night Shift.
That's
like,
a great name.
Because
like,
they were calling
name.
It like, yeah, late night work. I'm like, no, let's just call it Night Shift.
Late night work.
Whatever
the
it was,
fuck?
It didn't work.
This is why pilots don't go sometimes. People that make them are, they just, it's, you know, there is like a fucking territorial pissing that happens when you come in as talent and you do, and you're not an executive producer and they don't want your insight and they just want you to say, we're going to give you a read.
You know, there's two kinds of things, right? There's when you're doing a teleprompter show,
yep,
which a lot of these big CBS things would have been.
Yeah.
I did one of those for VH1. It was like the first thing I ever did. And I've done teleprompter work, all over the place. And I'd never done it before. And they get it, and they had it on a big screen TV. in the back, and then like, all right, and cue smoke, and then the smoke came and filled it up, and I couldn't even see it.
First time I read teleprompter, I didn't realize that the teleprompter went at the speed I went.
That you said it.
Yeah.
You were trying to catch it.
I was trying to catch up with him, and he was trying to catch up with me, and we're just tearing through. Yeah. And I said La Jolla because I didn't know how to pronounce La Jolla. what was the other thing I was going to say? Fuck. What were we? Oh. This is the other thing. I have done maybe since Three Sheets and maybe a little bit before then, you know, because I was the number one party animal in the country.
Right. We'll talk about that on my show.
Yeah. I've done a number. To this day, still, I get offered drinking shows, and they're so hard to do right.
What network? Really?
I've had.
That you've done pilots for them?
I've done more pilots of drinking pilots.
Yeah.
Than you could ever fucking imagine. Hmm. But then they always get killed because, like, I had one that was fucking amazing, the best show you would ever watch. It was basically, I just talked about it on Rogan's yesterday. It was called Buzzed. I would pick people up in a party bus at the bars, and it was a game show. Mm-hmm. We'd drive them home. They'd blow into a breathalyzer. Whatever they blew was their bank. You add a zero to the end. And then I played a game show with them in the thing. And it was just drunk people. And there were no rules. And I could give people money whenever the fuck they did anything. And it was absolute chaos. And it was the greatest fucking...
Yeah.
Comedy Central said it was the best.
No, yeah. I totally heard about this. What happened?
They aired it at Comedy Central, and they brought out a bottle of tequila on a Friday when they're doing their viewing. They all took a couple shots, turned it on, laughed hysterically, right. And they were like...
Why do I know this? I completely know this story.
35 episodes. What do you say? One guy stands up in the back, and he goes, I hate to say this, guys, but we cannot sell that show. He's like, we won't get advertised, we won't get anything, and it died. They were like, hold on, it's fucking hilarious. He's like, I know, but we can't get a car sponsorship. We can't get... Fucking, it's alcohol. Like, what are we going to get? Like, Advil is going to sponsor it? That's it. So it died. It's called Buzzed. And then they tried to reboot it on, like, MTV, and then MTV2, and they're still trying to reboot it. It's a great show.
Yeah.
I didn't create it. I just came in and wrote it and with Tom Segura, and it was so... The very first person we got in the thing, he sits down in the back. I go, so have you... We're playing a game called Guess What's in Your Mouth, where we blindfold them and just shove objects in their mouth, and they got to tell us what it is.
Yeah.
By the way, no insurance. We had a screwdriver in his mouth at one point, and he's sucking on it. We're in a fucking car.
Bouncing
like,
around.
We could have stabbed like a murder this guy. But like I said, what's
what? Drop him off. Just drop him off. Keep driving.
I said to the dude, I go, have you ever blown somebody? And he goes, a human? No. And I went, what? And he goes, once a squirrel. That was the first words for the beginning. And I you could literally hear the van behind us with the fucking Studio City or the Valley, whatever it's called, when they fucking, you know, they have all their computers and they watch the show. They're watching the live feed.
Yeah.
Video Village is right behind us. Laughing hysterically. You can hear them laughing.
The next car over.
And it was like the beginning. And then the very end was a guy going... A guy goes, we're playing Lick It or Stick It, where you put up a picture of a woman that could be ambiguous. Could be a lesbian, could not be a lesbian, but they're celebrities. And Jamie Lee Curtis is one of the ones we threw up. Three dudes were taking him back to Beverly Hills. And they all go, lick it. And he goes, no, stick it. My dad fucked her. And we were like, what? And he goes, yeah. I go, wait, I've always heard she's a hermaphrodite. And he goes, no. But then again, what did dad say he fucked a dude? Probably not. And I go, can you get your dad on the phone? And he goes, how much money? I go, I'll give you $300 if you can get your dad on the phone to say that she's not a hermaphrodite. So he calls his dad and he goes, dad. He goes, his dad answers the phone. He goes, is Jamie Lee Curtis a hermaphrodite? And he goes, who is this? And he's like, it's your son for $300. And you silent. And you hear, negative, I fucked her. It was the fucking greatest pilot you've ever seen.
Dude, I don't know where I heard it, but I heard that whole
story. They probably brought it to you to try to reboot it, because I also then got...
No,
because what happens is I made it, and then I signed a deal with Travel, and I was there for like... I signed like an overall deal, so I could do it at Comedy Central.
Did you have a drink when you were doing the show? You have to.
I didn't drink at all. Seldomly drink on camera.
I very seldomly don't.
What's funny is I've done actually a bunch of drinking shows.
Can I ask you a question?
Shoot.
Are we still recording? Are we just holding these door,
no,
faces?
Yeah, we are recording. We are recording. Let's wrap it up. Let's go to your podcast.
I just didn't know.
Let's do your podcast.
All right. By the way, just straight up to be continued on my podcast.
So now,
the Zane Lamprey Show.
So just so you know, guys, if you want to listen to the rest of this, go to what's your
Zane Lamprey. Just I mean, we're on iTunes.
Yeah.
Just the Zane Lamprey Show or just ZaneLamprey.com, whatever.
Perfect. Yeah. And then.
And then go check out the. Forget about anything else. Go to chug.tv, check out the Kickstarter, and watch some amazing. We might actually have you as a special guest. I might have to throw that in there.
$25 will get you all access to all the episodes. And if I can tell you right now, if everyone listening to this podcast just did that,
right.
If 25%, you get funded tomorrow.
Right.
So you guys go in for $25. It's just entertainment for fucking 6 episodes. You will definitely get it. And chances
think
are
about,
we'll do
think
10.
About two things. Think about how much your cable bill is every month.
And this is going to have, by the way, this will have no network notes. Not to say that networks fuck up shows.
No,
but,
as a matter of fact.
But drinking shows.
We've had to cut so many amazing things. I'll tell this story. If you remind me to tell this story about when I was in Russia and a machine gun. This is a true story.
Shut up.
And it had to get cut because the network was like, you can't have a machine gun and you guys are all drunk drinking vodka in the middle of Moscow in the winter. So we had to cut it. Not only will we be able to play that, but we've had to take 30, 40-minute shows and cut the shit out of them just to make them fit in the network.
It's going
to
be – I'm telling you what I'm saying. And network notes do not fuck a show up, but it definitely – the thing that as a talent that you love the most often is the one thing that legal goes, we can't have that.
Yeah.
So this show will have that. For $25,
there's no legal.
You'll be the first
group. By the way, even if it does go afterwards to a network, those people will never see the version that you're seeing.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Because when it goes to the network, I guarantee you they're gonna get first cut. So what you will see will be unadulterated.
It'll be adulterated.
Adulterated.
I don't know what that means. Yeah. But
so go in $25. Go. I would go 50 and get this shirt. Fuck it.
Is that what you're gonna do?
I'm not done donating. So yeah, I gotta look. I gotta pay my gardener and maid. All right, so we're going over to Zane's place to go tape for a podcast. Hopefully, we'll break.
Cheers.
All right. This episode was brought to you by The Machine.